Hi, I'm Nicole Webb, the CEO of The Impact Agency, and this is Making an Impact, a podcast to help you be better and do better as a business, individual, and leader through the communications lens. Hi everyone, it's Nicole Webb, the CEO of The Impact Agency, and welcome to our podcast. Today I've got something very special. I've brought along some team members to look at what we've seen so far this year. And what are some of the watch outs for companies and brands as we go further and deeper into this year? Needless to say, the cost of living is still hurting. So it's having a knock-on effect in the way influencers and content creators are working. Crisis communications is leading the charge. People are stressed and angry, and that does not bode well for companies who make any missteps. So let me first welcome Katie Eastman. Hello, Katie. How are you?
Hi, Nicole. Well, thanks. How are you?
Katie's our group account director. We've also got Marcella Ballart. Marcella is our strategic communications director. Welcome, Marcella.
Hello, everyone.
We also have Victoria, our chief operations officer. Welcome, Victoria.
Hi, Nicole. Very nice to join you.
So I thought we might start with Katie. We did some research last year around influencers and content creators. Seeing anything unusual in 2024 so far that's kind of off center from what we were talking about last year?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question, Nicole. It's a big question because while not that much time has passed, we have seen a big shift in the influencer landscape. I think the four key takeouts that we had from the research last year still stand and are still very valid, but there's one in particular that I think has been amplified. So the four key takeouts last year was interrogating objectives, so making sure that your campaign is actually meeting business objectives. Another is around authenticity for both the brand and the creator and their community. The third is all about providing support but championing creativity. And the fourth is about testing, trialing, tweaking and testing again. So they're all still really, really important things to keep in mind when you're looking at an influencer campaign. But the second one, authenticity, has really shone through in the last few months. With the cost of living, we know that brands are having to be extra careful in the campaigns and the content that they are pushing out to make sure that it's sensitive to the community. We know that so many Australians are struggling. And it goes the same for influencers. What we've seen is most influencers, for the most part, have been even more picky than they normally would in terms of what kind of content briefs they're taking on from brands. They're making sure that it is really authentic to their life and is it relevant to their life and therefore their followers and their community, because good influencers are being really sensitive to the fact that their community is struggling. So they don't want to be encouraging people to spend money on products that they don't need or that aren't actually suited to them. So they're being extra selective, and there's also extra scrutiny as well from both their followers and also earned media. There's a bit of crossover into earned media if a campaign isn't or content isn't sensitive to the environment that we're living in. And I don't think that's going to go away anytime soon. So I think we're going to see more of it, and we're going to see more pickiness from our creator partners.
Yeah, it's a really good point. And we've seen, I suspect the Daily Mail has a journalist just scrolling through Instagram looking for the poor, unfortunate influencer that's sponsored a post of a product that may be too expensive for people to buy these days. So I think we all need to be really, really mindful of what's going on in people's lives. And, you know, that's across the board, isn't it? I think it's not just with the influencers, like you said, it's through our earned media as well. Crisis communications, Victoria, I'm going to take this over to you. There's, you know, we do have this cost of living issue across the board. People, like I said at the beginning, people are angry. They're looking to, you know, take their anger out on some people. The supermarkets have been a case in point. As we know, we saw the CEO of Woolworths up and leave an interview with the ABC and the uproar that followed from that. But it's just part and parcel of everyone just being angry at the prices that they're paying at the supermarket anyway.
Yeah, that's right. There is a lot of anger out there, and there is a sense that that we need justice, and that everybody should have their opportunity to comment. And I think that that's why the world of issues management and managing a crisis has become a really interesting spot to keep an eye on at the moment. Normally in life, processes and procedures for dealing with things, you know, get better over time. But at the moment, I think what we're seeing with, you know, an incident or a crisis is that its life cycle is probably going to be a lot longer than you want it to be. And it could break from anywhere. That's the other risk that we have now. It's no longer a matter of watching traditional media. A crisis or an issue could break through social media. It could be through a forum, a disgruntled customer on doing a product review. So the likelihood of you experiencing an issue is greatly increased. And what we see with the news cycle is that it's really easy for our journalists to add to their story, to incorporate a post or a screen grab, which means that stories aren't going away quickly. You need to be prepared. You need to have a plan to address them. But I think more importantly, you need to be ready to think about the relationships that have been affected by the issue or crisis, because if you don't fix them, that's where it's really going to keep going and keep spiraling out of control for you.
And I'd just add to that that, you know, plan for a crisis. Do the scenario planning. I mean, we talk about this all the time. Don't wait for a crisis to happen to actually start answering questions on something. It's by that stage, it's a longer win for the company.
That's right. The greater the digital footprint, the more information out there, the longer the story will be. So you really need to get on top of it really quickly. I think we're also seeing, you know, past comments are coming back to haunt people. So whatever you do put out there needs to be right, and you need to be happy and confident with it.
Absolutely. Digital footprint, that's probably a good segue to you, Marcella. And talking about the changes that have happened this year, particularly around content, editorial policies, and, you know, let's chuck in a bit of AI in there as well.
Yeah, so I think particularly when it comes to digital marketing, AI, the social media realm, it's all part and parcel of the comms landscape, and ever more so now it's becoming ingrained in a lot of what comms professionals are doing and how we're communicating across those digital channels. AI is a really interesting one, I think. Some research from internationally, it's a bit of a murky area when it comes to media. There's some interesting research coming out of Netherlands and Belgium as to which media outlets have a proper AI guideline in place, or, you know, some what they're working towards in terms of transparency. And it's hard to obviously estimate how much that's being enforced and used. There are some editors out there who are making, you know, some really clear agreements amongst their staff on not using AI or blocking things like ChatGPT altogether. But then for some reason, they are able to use it when it comes to headlines and social media posts. So again, it's becoming a bit more murky. The BBC has apparently banned the use of ChatGPT altogether. So I think from an agency point of view, or even, you know, in-house resources, we are essentially mini newsrooms. So, you know, with recent events such as Kate, for example, I think everyone's sort of on alert as to what are your editorial policies, and even the editorial policies or media policies of your suppliers as well. So, you know, your photographers and, you know, video production agencies and that sort of thing. So it's sort of raised its head again in terms of how we're using it and what policies are in place and do we need to review them?
Yes, the Kensington Palace incident is certainly one that will be studied in years to come. Victoria, ESG, any news, any movement on ESG? I know we're a little bit behind the eight ball here in Australia compared to Europe. Anything happening from a communications perspective in that space?
Oh, look, I think what's interesting to watch is we are making some progress. In the middle of the year, we should see companies, particularly large-scale companies, having to include climate reporting into their annual reports alongside their financial statements and their auditor's notes and the reports you'll get from directors. You'll also see environmental impact reporting. There's a dedicated list of what's expected. it needs to explore governance strategy, what the company is doing to address climate-related risks and opportunities, what their transition plans are, identifying risks, and also greenhouse gas reporting. So some really clear metrics there. I think if we look to Europe, you know, we've sort of seen two ways to tackle these reporting requirements. You get your first type of company that really drags their feet and sees it as a bit of a complex time suck that takes away from their business. But then you get companies who are really embracing this level of reporting as a way to differentiate their brand, to really elevate their reputation, their culture, and even, you know, the brand's character. You know, using that transparency, the goal setting that's required as an opportunity to really highlight how they are a different organisation. I really like the way some of these organisations have been embracing this. It's a different level of brand intelligence that we're seeing from these companies. They're using these opportunities to contribute to thought leadership, to inspire innovation. And they're also using it really strategically to mitigate against risks. You know, these are the organisations that are coming out strong with really clear anti-greenwashing editorial policies. They've got a really good understanding of their partnerships. They use media monitoring to understand what their partners are doing. They've got the knowledge. It means that they can make good decisions and they're presenting really well. And that's working really well from a reputation standpoint.
Yeah, fabulous. Hey, throwing it to all three of you, one of the things that I've noticed, and I bought a copy of the latest issue of Elle magazine the other day, it seems to be opinion pieces and bylines are making a huge comeback. We know the newsrooms are getting smaller and ad revenue is down. There's more competition. Is that what you guys are seeing as well?
I think it's across the board. It's in consumer media, it's in trade media, it's in business media. I mean, particularly business media, you've always had a lot of contributor pieces and bylines to complement feature pieces that are written by in-house journos. But we're also seeing a lot in the consumer space that we previously didn't see as much of. It was always there, but we're seeing more of it, and trade titles as well. It's all around resources. Newsrooms have been cut, and it can help produce really great content that the journalists still have sign off on. So it does kind of straddle, particularly in trade titles, you've got lots of pieces that are kind of advertorial based as well, but there are true opinion pieces that trade titles are looking to have submitted.
So does that mean the media release is dead?
Absolutely not. I think the purpose of a media release is much broader these days, but it's not necessarily needed for every single piece of media outreach, but it does have a place, and I'm sure Marcella can speak to this a lot more, but the way that you cut that content up and use it in different ways is really important. I might throw it to you, Marcella, on
that. Absolutely agree. I mean, I think what it comes down to is the newsworthiness of a piece. I think the media release is sort of like your, you know, holy grail in a way, or your, you know, source of truth. And there's opportunities to look at it through different lenses and repurpose the content. You know, it's absolutely true that newsrooms are finding it much harder in terms of their time and the resources, and they're being stretched quite thin. So I think from an agency perspective, there's certainly an opportunity there to use that to our advantage and provide some support there for our media colleagues where we can. And at the same time, it's an opportunity to help progress the narrative of our clients.
I think it also speaks to a bit of a change in who we perceive as being an authority figure, and where we like to, you know, receive information from and who has clout. You know, we look at the rise of TikTok and the breadth and scope of influencers out there has really changed. And I think that people are much more open to the idea of hearing from someone's firsthand experience or, you know, personal journey are more than they were before, and that can make them an expert simply because they've experienced something, rather than them being a doctor or a professor or an expert in a particular field. That first-hand experience has moved from, you know, just being a case study to actually being the voice who can commentate on a whole issue, which is a really interesting change.
Yeah, it's a really good point. Also, how hard is it doing earned media support for a client? It was getting hard last year, and I think this year it's even harder. So, you know, brands, companies that are trying to get that earned coverage for themselves are certainly up against. I don't know. What do you think, guys? Do you think it is harder this year? I just feel like it's harder.
I think over the last few years, or even 5 years, it's been getting harder every year to get media coverage. We've got less journalists, less media outlets, but just as many brands and companies competing for coverage here in Australia. But I would agree with you, Nicole. I think that this year has been particularly hard, and I think where it's harder is where brands, companies and spokespeople want to dip in and dip out of earned media, where what is working is brands and companies that have an ongoing program of work where we're reaching out with different topics or different spokespeople on an ongoing basis to offer something different to those journalists. And it might be that some outreach that we're doing on a particular topic isn't of interest to that journo, but it jogs their memory of that one that we did a few months ago. And we get coverage for that announcement that was really tricky earlier in the year. So more than ever, it's really important to be investing in earned media on an ongoing basis to build up that trust with journos.
We call it that push, yeah. Push-pull, right? So the more you're pushing out, the more we're going to pull them in like you said, if a story comes up, they go, oh, actually, I had a really good conversation with somebody about that a couple of months ago. I'm going to get them on the phone and interview them about this particular topic. So, yeah, absolutely, that drumbeat ongoing, really, really important. Hey, is there anything else that we want to talk about? Anything else that we've seen unusual so far this year, or any watch-outs that you want to talk about before we end the podcast?
One of the things that has stuck out to me, at least, is this whole issue with news on social media platforms. I think, given the industry that we work with, that will affect us in some way, shape, or form. So I think that will be an important watch out, I guess, for the industry as a whole, across the media landscape, PR and comms, all of it, really.
I think fake news is still going to be a huge issue too. If you've got the Facebooks of the world not monitoring their sites as much as they used to, like they're not investing as much money in making sure that the information that they're posting is true and accurate, then that's going to be an issue, I think, more of an issue going forward too.
One other thing that we're constantly keeping an eye on and having to test and tweak is the social algorithm. We know that it's constantly changing. Every single social platform, it constantly changes in what's getting cut through, both for brands as well as influencers. So it's a convo that we have every single week within the office to share insights across the team to make sure that we are kind of tweaking and developing content and briefs for content creators that's going to perform as best as it can.
And just on target audiences too, we know Gen Z, they're spending at least 3 hours a day on their smartphones. So keeping an eye on them this year and understanding them a little bit more is also going to be important. But it'd be great to catch up with you guys towards the end of the year and just go, okay, what's happened? Where do we need to go from here? But some really lovely insights. So thank you for all joining me. And this has been the Impact Podcast. And thanks for joining us.